Today we will read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, which is the authorized biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, most extensive biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has given a Mangalacharana in 14 verses. What's a Mangalacharana? Mangalacharana means when you begin any auspicious work, you preface it with some auspicious verses to glorify the previous spiritual masters, the Supreme Lord, to give benedictions, to ask for devotional service like that, just to invoke auspiciousness. So he's done this in his Chaitanya Charitamrita. 14 beautiful verses to describe the absolute truth, particularly in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's always good to review this. Here Srila Prabhupada has written in his chapter summary. The first chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita begins with 14 Sanskrit verses that describe the absolute truth. Then the next three Sanskrit verses describe the principal deities of Vrindavan, namely Sri Radha Madan Mohan, Sri Radha Govinda Deva, and Sri Radha Gopinath Ji. The first of the 14 verses is a symbolic representation of the Supreme Truth, and the entire first chapter is in actuality devoted to this single verse, which describes Lord Chaitanya in his six different transcendental manifestations. The first verse is dealing with the spiritual masters and the Lord in his other six manifestations. Let's read the Mangalacharana through, just so that we know. Vande gurum isha bhaktan isham ishavatarakan tat prakashamscha tat chaktihi krishna chaitanya sanyakam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Vande Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodatao Gaurodai Pushpavantao Chitrao Shandao Tamonudao. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and the moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gaura to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Gaura means Bengal. That's why we are sometimes called Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because there are so many of us in Bengal. Yadadvaitam brahmopanishadi drapyasya tanubha yatmancharyami purusha iti syosyam shivibhavaha chiraishwaryai purno yahiha bhagavan sasvayamayam Najaitanyat Krishnat Jagati Paratatvam Paraneha. What the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body, and the Lord known as the Supersoul is but his localized plenary portion. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, full with six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. Anarpita chadim chidat kuraneya vatirna kalau samarpayata munnato jalara samsa bhakti shriyam hari purata sundara dyudigadamba sandipetaha sada hridaya kandare spurata vashachi nandana. May that Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Shachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of molten gold. He has appeared in this age of Kali by his causeless mercy, to bestow what no incarnation ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant spiritual knowledge of the mellow taste of his service.
Radha Krishna Pranaya Vrakatirladini Shaktirasmat Ekatmanava Bibhuvi Pura Deha Bhedam Gatao Tao Chaitanyakhyam Prakatamadhuna Yadvayam Chaikyamapstam Radha Bhava Judisavalitam Nomi Krishna Surupam.
The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separated themselves eternally. Now, these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I bow down to him who has manifested himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrishavana Yaiva Swadyo Yenadbhuta Madhurima Kidrishova Madiyaha Sokhyam Chasya Marana Bhavataha Kidrisham Veti Lobhat Tadbhavarhya Samajina Shachi Garbhasindho Harindu. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appears from the womb of Srimati Shachi Devi as the moon appears from the ocean. Sankarshana karanato yashayi garbodhashayi chapayobdhishayi Sheshascha yasyam shakalah sanityanandakhirama sharanam mamastu. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarshana, Sheshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karana ocean, Garbha ocean, and ocean of milk are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. Maya tite vyapi vaikunthaloke purnaishwarye tri chaturvyuha madhye Rupam yasyodbhati sankarshan akhyam tam shri nityananda ramam prapadye. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, who is known as Sankarshana in the midst of the Chaturvyuha, consisting of Vasudeva, Sankarshana, Pradyumna, and Anuruddha. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, far beyond the material creation. Maya bharta janda sankhashriyanga Shete sakshat karanam bodha madhye yasyaikanksha shri poman adi devas tam shri nityananda ramam prapadye. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, whose partial representation called Karanodakashahi Vishnu, lying on the Karana ocean, is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy and the shelter of all the universes. What's another name for this Vishnu form? Just thought I'd wake you up. Karanodakashayi Vishnu is also called Mahavishnu. He's called Karanodakashayi because he lies on the Udaka, the ocean of Karana. What does Karana mean? Cause, the ocean of cause. Yasyam sham shashri lagarabodhashayi yannabhyabjam loka sanghata nalam Loka srashtu sutika dhama dhatustam shri nityananda ramam prabhadye. I offer my full obeisances under the feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, a partial part of whom is Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. From the navel of Garbhodakashayi Vishnu sprouts the lotus that is the birthplace of Brahma, the engineer of the universe. The stem of that lotus is the resting place of the multitude of planets. So this time we've heard about another Vishnu form. Which one? Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. And what does he lie on? What does Garbha mean? Garbha means womb. He lies on the ocean of womb. We all know, well, maybe we don't all know, so I'll explain. The ocean, from the ocean of cause, Mahavishnu lies there, and he produces out of his own breathing unlimited eggs, as it were, universes. They're called Anda, Brahmanda, eggs of the absolute truth. And within each of those eggs, the Lord again expands himself as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu because he fills up half of that egg with his own perspiration and then lies on top of that. This is pretty psychedelic, isn't it? So this is Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. All these are called Purusha avatars. Mahavishnu, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, and then Paramatman, three Purusha avatars. Kshirotakashayi Vishnu is called Paramatman. We're coming to him next. So they are the sources of the material universes. So when Garbhodakashayi Vishnu lies on this ocean that he's created there, then from his navel comes a lotus flower, and who lives in that lotus flower? Brahma, who invents the universe. He's the engineer, you might say, of this universe.
Yasyam sham shash paramatma khilanam poshta vishnur bhati dugdadhishayi kshauni bharta yat kalasopyanantastam shri nityanandaramam prapadye.
I offer my respectful obeisances under the feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, whose secondary part is the Vishnu lying in the ocean of milk. That Kshirodakashayi Vishnu is the supersoul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universes. Sheshanaga is his further subpart. So the Lord then, within each universe, there is an embassy of the transcendental world that is called Shweta Dvipa, the White Island. And where is this White Island? In which ocean? Kshirodaka, the ocean of milk. Within this universe, there are different oceans. It's not just salt water. Why salt? Of all things, why salt? Think about it. Why not milk? There's an ocean of milk somewhere. There's an ocean of salt somewhere, not very far away, we know. So similarly, there are other oceans as well. So in this salt, in this milk ocean, there's a Vaikuntha embassy, one island, in which Vishnu resides there as Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. So he's lying on this milk ocean. And when the devas have too much problem in universal administration, because everybody knows management is a headache, so sometimes they have to go to the big boss, Uparwala, they say in Hindi, the guy upstairs. So that sometimes they go there and they chant Purusha Sukta. This is a Vedic mantra, Purusha Sukta, very famous from the Rig Veda. And they pray to Lord Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. Now this same Kshirodakashayi Vishnu, although he's lying in his office there at Shweta Dweep, he's also expanded throughout the hearts of all living beings throughout this world. This is just getting better and better and better, isn't it? Within our own heart, the Lord is expanded in one of his manifestations, Kshirodakashayi Vishnu, called Paramatman. Paramatman is the super soul, we say. There are two souls within the body. One is the individual soul, the Jivatma, and the other one is the super soul, the Paramatma. So this super soul has expanded from Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. And all of the avatars who come to this material world, they all actually manifest through this Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. This is a noteworthy thing, so bookmark this. They come through Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. How does Krishna expand? Let's situate these Purusha avatars in the greater scheme of things. There is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, in Golok Vrindavan. He is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. His first expansion is Balaram. And Balaram is the same as Krishna. The only difference is color. Then from Balaram expands whom? Chaturvyuha. From the Chaturvyuha we have Vasudev, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, which is mentioned a few verses ago. And then from the Chaturvyuha come these, the Mahavishnu. The Purusha avatars come. We've already mentioned Mahavishnu. His another name is? Karanadakashayi Vishnu. From him, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu. From him, Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. And from him, all the incarnations come. So it's not direct. So Paramatma is first there. Like when we install the deity, if you've read the 11th canto, you know the process is the pure devotee will invite that Kshirodakashayi Vishnu, because he's the source of all the incarnations, out of his heart and into this deity to manifest as the Archa Avatara, another avatara of the Lord, called the Archamurti, coming from Kshirodakashayi Vishnu. So, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, whose secondary part is to Vishnu lying in the ocean of milk. That Kshirodakashayi Vishnu is the supersoul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universes. Sheshanaga is his further subpart. He lies on Ananta Shesha. Anyone here from South India? Trivandrum? In Trivandrum, there's a famous temple called Ananta Shayana, Padmanabha Swami. Big Mahavishnu deity lying on Ananta Shesha. So this is what we're discussing here. And let's continue. We have described Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in several verses. The gurus and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in several verses. We've also described Nityananda. And in connection with Nityananda, we've described the Purusha avatars. Now we're going to hear about Advaita Acharya and how he's connected here. Mahavishnur jagatkarta mayaya yasrajat yadaha dasyavatara evayam Advaita Acharya Ishwaraha. Lord Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Advaitam harina advaitar acharyam bhakti samshanat bhaktavataramisham tam advaitacharyam ashraye. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. What does Advaita mean? Non-dual, no difference. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. Finally, it's like we have darshan today of Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktishaktikam. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, Krishna, who is non-different from his features as a devotee, devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. Now, who's who here? We mentioned six things, looks like. The Supreme Lord, Krishna, his features as a devotee, his devotional incarnation, his devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. So the Supreme Lord is Krishna, who is non-different from his feature as a devotee. This is called Bhaktarupam. Krishnam Bhaktarupa Sarupakam. And so the Sarup, his expansion, as Prabhupada says, this is Nityananda. And the Bhakta Avatar, we've just heard in the previous verse, that's Advaita Acharya. And Bhakta Khyam, who's called a devotee. And devotional energy, Vidadhar, and others. Prabhupada describes it in different ways sometimes, but this is Panchatattva, which we sing every morning in the form of this Panchatattva Mahamantra. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Again, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Now, this Chaitanya Charitamrita, written in Bengali, well, actually it's written in 50% Bengali, 50% Sanskrit, because he quotes so much. Krishnadas Kaviraj was a very, very learned scholar. And he composed this book ostensibly in Bengali verses about 500 years ago, the end of the 16th century or thereabouts. And in it, he describes the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not so much the Vrindavan pastimes, because an earlier book, or the Navadvip pastimes, sorry, because an earlier book had described the Lord's Navadvip pastimes. What book is that? Chaitanya Bhagavata by Vrindavan Das Thakur. That was previously called Chaitanya Mangala. Then they changed the name to Chaitanya Bhagavata. So he emphasized the Lord's later pastimes, and it seems that Srila Prabhupada chose to translate this book around 1974 or thereabouts because it is a very nice presentation of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And it's very important for us to know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami himself, when he's discussing all these things, he actually says as much, that we should not shy away from discussions on philosophy, because they strengthen our faith in the Lord, and they give us the discrimination that we require to surrender to the Lord. What's that philosophy called? Philosophical understanding? What is a fancy Sanskrit name for that? Sambandhajnana. And therefore, the next of these 14 Mangalacharana verses, they glorify the deities in order. The Sambandha deity, which is Madan Mohan, the Abhideya deity, which is Govinda, and the Prayojana deity, which is Gopinath. Madan Mohan, his name is significant. Who is Madana? Madana. What does he do? Cupid. He shoots you with 5 arrows. What are those arrows? And the arrows, they don't hurt. They're very nice. They're flower arrows. Pushpabana, he's called. So when you get hit with a flower, it's no big deal, right? So what are those 5 arrows? The 5 senses. Through any one of our senses, Krishna says, if we concentrate, our intelligence can be pulled down. We can be distracted from the real goal of this short human life that we have. So generally, people are most distracted by Cupid. And Cupid is attracting them through 5 arrows in the forms of the 5 senses. We see something very beautiful. We feel something that's very nice. We eat something that's very appealing, etc., etc. All these things. But Krishna is Madana Gopal, or Madana Mohana. He is the one who bewilders Cupid. From Brahma Samhita, what do we know about this? Who knows what I'm thinking? Kandarpa is another name of Cupid. What does the Brahma Samhita say about Kandarpa? Kandarpa koti kamaniya. He is the kamaniya thing. Kamaniya means what you want. Even for thousands of Cupids, this is Krishna. So Madan Mohan gives us a glimpse of this. Madan Mohan, by establishing or helping us to establish Sambandha Gyan, knowledge of the Absolute, real understanding, he gives us a glimpse of our transcendental position. And therefore our faith is strengthened, and we know from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and other sources that the only difference between an advanced spiritualist and a neophyte or less advanced devotee is the degree to which the faith has been developed. The degree to which faith is manifested practically and the degree to which the faith is strengthened and immovable. Komala Shraddhas. Komala Shraddhas are the neophytes, the Kanishta Adhikaris. They can accept that Krishna is in the temple, but they can't find him anywhere else. And they also don't really know that Krishna is within all living beings and that all living beings are very important to Krishna. They don't realize this very deeply. So they're called Kanishta. Kanishta means the youngest. Or their Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls them Komala Shraddhas. Pliable. Their faith is pliable, soft, mushy. Mushy faith. So this is Sambandha Gyan is necessary to elevate us beyond this level. And when we become practically devoted to Krishna, chiefly through the form of his spiritual master, because we have skipped the first chapter, but if we had read that, we would know that this is how Krishna manifests first and foremost in this material world. Then we come to how to practically render devotional service, and that is called Abhideya. The deity who takes over there is Govinda. And then the ultimate goal of this devotional service, what is the purpose of this whole endeavor? Prayojana, what is that? Prema pum artho mahan. The topmost goal of human life. Love of Godhead. And love of Godhead doesn't mean love as we know it in this world. It's a transcendental reality of which we have no idea. It's important to recognize this. In the Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Sanatana Goswami very eloquently writes that there is no difference between love of Godhead and absolute humility. They are one and the same. The degree to which humility is manifested, to that degree you have love of Godhead. That's a lot to think about. That's an awful lot to think about. But that's the subject of another class. So if we at least realize, if we have enough humility and faith to recognize that I really don't know anything about who I am, I really don't know a thing about what love is. And what is more important to us than ourselves and love? Think about that. Isn't that what motivates us in this world more than anything else? Either yourself or those you love? Not much else. And we know nothing about either one of them. Therefore, he sings, Yogyata vichari kichu nahi pai. Tomar kuna sar. Sar means the essence of a thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays to his spiritual master, I don't have any qualification. If you look at me, you won't find a thing. Your mercy is whatever I have, is the essence of whatever I am in terms of devotional service. Therefore, we say his divine grace. Anyway, that's already been covered in the last chapter. Anyway, Prabhupada chose to translate Chaitanya Charitamrita because it not only has the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it also gives a very solid understanding of the philosophy, which is very important. Now, we've just read the first 14 shlokas, verses, Sanskrit verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that open up this auspicious work and purify our consciousness. Each of these verses has so much significance. And in effect, the first few chapters, at least the first four or five chapters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, are in effect a commentary on these verses. If we read carefully, we'll see. The first chapter is dealing entirely with the first Mangalacharana verse. Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan Ishan Ishavatarakan Ityadi. Now the second chapter is dealing with also the verse offering obeisances to Gaurinithai was mentioned in the first chapter at the end. Now the second verse, the second chapter, I thought it would be good to read. Let us see what he says first of all. In every chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll notice in the beginning of each chapter, he has another Sanskrit verse just to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in some way. So in the second chapter, beginning, this chapter is entitled, by the way, what is it? The Identity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Something like that. It's not in this edition, but in some editions they title it like that. So in the first verse he says, very nice verse. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Vande Balopi Yaranugrahat Darinna namat graha vyaptam siddhanta sagaram. This is a very, very nice verse. He says, I offer my obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even an ignorant child can swim across the ocean of conclusive truth, which is full of the crocodiles of various theories. Purport, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even an inexperienced boy with no educational culture can be saved from the ocean of nescience. Srila Prabhupada is speaking from personal experience, mind you, which is full of various types of philosophical doctrines that are like dangerous aquatic animals. Let's read this over again. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even an inexperienced boy with no educational culture can be saved from the ocean of nescience. Srila Prabhupada experienced this on many, 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 many occasions. Those who came to join him in the beginning were all virtually inexperienced boys with no education, with no culture, no idea of Krishna or of the deep significance of this philosophical conclusion. And the second point is that this ocean of potentiality, the ocean of all possible proposals that we encounter in life, ideological and otherwise, it's full of various kinds of doctrines that are like dangerous aquatic animals. Crocodiles, here it says in the translation. The philosophy of the Buddha, the argumentative presentations of the Jnanis, the yoga systems of Patanjali and Gautama, and the systems of the philosophers like Karnara, Kapila, and Dattatreya are dangerous creatures in the ocean of nescience. Now, what do we even know of these philosophies, honestly speaking? We actually do know them because they reincarnate themselves age after age after age, along with those who propagate them age after age after age. Prabhupada said, nothing is new. Nothing under the sun is new. There's only so many arguments that you can give against surrendering to Krishna. And they've all come up since time immemorial. There's nothing really new. Bodha, the Buddhist philosophy, it's very popular nowadays because it's perfectly consistent with the modern mindset. Godless, there's no authority, you be nice to each other, there's no surrender involved. There's no absolute truth, really. There's nothing. This is the same conclusion that we hear from secular humanists, isn't it? Pretty much. And it concludes here. By the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can have real understanding of the essence of knowledge by avoiding these sectarian views and accepting the lotus feet of Krishna as the ultimate goal of life. Let us all worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his gracious mercy to the conditioned souls. See how Srila Prabhupada said these purports are my devotional ecstasies? Sometimes you can see it. It seems evident here. Now, crocodiles. Do we have crocodiles in the bayous here? Oh, we're not in Houston. Yesterday I was in Houston, sorry. We don't have crocodiles this far north, I think, but I think they might have them in Houston, and they definitely have them in Louisiana and east of there. Now, a crocodile is a particularly vicious creature. Crocodiles eat their own young. That's how vicious they are. If a small child goes swimming, well, they experience it all the time. Sometimes small children go swimming, and they're attacked by a crocodile. They're very vicious. Now, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that those who propagate these godless views in society, and in the old days they used to call it, Nyaya Vaisheshika, or they used to call it, whatever, so many things they used to call it. Different philosophies are there. Ajivika philosophies as well, that means the Buddhists, the Jains, For any philosophy that doesn't ultimately aim at surrendering to Krishna, it's like a vicious crocodile. Or as Prabhupada elsewhere says, it's like a reptile with a jewel on the hood. That's why we say when there's somebody who's particularly mean-spirited, we call him reptilian, isn't it? Cold-blooded creature. See? So these philosophies are very dangerous. And our faith is very pliable. That's not a good combination. That's why Kanishta Adhikar, devotional service rendered on the level of pliable faith, is not really advisable, because in most cases it's just a matter of time before your faith gets pulled away by some crocodile. Like Gajendra, we read some time ago in the Bhagavatam. Gajendra, the crocodile, went to swim, and he's enjoying with all of his relatives that he thought were loyal and would save him, and who loved him, and he was enjoying with all the she-elephants, just like we try to do in this material world, and this crocodile grabbed his foot and pulled him down, and there was nothing he could do. There was nothing he could do. All of his relatives abandoned him. They couldn't help him, or they didn't care, or both. And we will see that this is the case with ourselves. Every one of us will see this. Don't think you're an exception. Shankaracharya says, Yavat Vitto Parjana Sakta Tavan Nijaparivaro Raktaha. That means that as long as you're able to bring in money, as long as you're able to produce sense gratification for others, that much you'll be popular. Paschad jivati jarjaradehe, later on when you're living in this decrepit old body, vartam kopina prachati gehe, even in your own home, nobody will even care to ask, how are you doing? Isn't it sick? This is why Srila Prabhupada says this material world is perverse. There's no love here. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back situation. We were talking the other day in Los Angeles. If you study Indian history, you'll find that there is not a single king, practically, within recorded history of India. That's a good 2,000 years or more. There's not a single one of them, practically speaking, that did not ascend to the throne by killing his father or his siblings. Hindu, Muslim, makes no difference. This material world is ahead. It's the material world is like this. So, therefore, we're surrounded by crocodiles and we're in the ocean. And Prabhupada says here, the ocean of nescience. Nescience. Why nescience? Science means what? To know. And nescience means to not know. To not know. There are people, if you push hard enough, you'll see. Basically, nobody knows anything in this material world. You just have to push hard enough. And you'll see that ultimately the person will peter out. Not be able to give you something substantial. So, ocean of nescience and full of crocodiles that can pull you away from this sobering realization of the real nature of what's going on here. And of the real potential that human life offers us. Tadapya dhruvam arthadam, Prahlad Maharaj says. Although it's temporary, it's very, very valuable. Because in this short span of human life, if we use it wisely, we can get so much. We can reestablish our eternal existence, our eternal identity. We can become fixed in that identity. Our faith can become strong. That's called Madhyama Adhikar or Uttama Adhikar. And then we can dive deep into the ocean of Bhakti Rasamrita, nectar of Bhakti Rasa. So many mellows of devotional sentiment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead based on practical surrender to Him. This is real. There are devotees who are on this level of Bhava Bhakti or even Prema Bhakti. And Narad Bhakti Sutra and all of the other Shastras as well. Tadeva Sadhyatam, Tadeva Sadhyatam. Strive for that thing. Strive for that thing. When the Shastra repeats something a few times, that means it's important. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing this out in his purport here. Now, we've described the negative picture. Let's go to the positive picture. Krishna kirtana gana nartana kala patho jani bhrajita sadbhakta valihangsa chakramasupashreni viharaspadam karnanandi kala dhvanirvahatume jiva maru prangane shri chaitanya dayane setava lasallila sudhaswardhani. Oh, my merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectary and Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens the ears. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, our tongues always engage in vibrating useless sounds that do not help us realize transcendental peace. The tongue is compared to a desert because a desert needs a constant supply of refreshing water to make it fertile and fruitful. Water is the substance most needed in the desert. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on is compared to a mere drop of water Because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. Let's stop here. Let me read this again. Did you hear what he said? The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on is compared to a mere drop of water because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. Now, who can explain this? How do the mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on, how do they have a transcendental feature, a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure? What's transcendental about them? But then they're not mundane anymore, because that's called Yukta Vairagya. Anybody? Any sagacious philosophers here? I think we're getting warm. It's a reflection. Prabhupada says it's a mere drop of water in the desert. We thirst for an ocean, and these things supply us a drop. But how do they supply us a drop? That means there's a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure in them. Okay, that's also a little bit, you know, subtle things, or maybe a little bit more, you know, just like they say in German, Geist, right? There's no difference, you know. They don't make a very clear distinction. Still the energy of Krishna. This is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's interpretation. I'm thinking of what they call ascetic theory, rasa theory, which goes back to at least the 9th century, and a lot of Kashmiri Shaiva authors, they used to talk about rasa, the nature of rasa, and they were not talking about rasa as we know it, in terms of bhakti rasa. They were talking about mundane rasa, particularly with respect to art and other things that are described here. Anybody seen the movie Avatar? We have some honest people in the room. They're making much of this avatar. Actually, the real avatar is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for Kali Yuga. He's more than that, but at least he's that. Anyway, when we go to movies, sometimes in a movie, we see people getting beaten to a pulp. Sometimes in a movie, we see people getting blown away. And yet we enjoy that. If we're honest, we'll admit. There's something there that we like. How is this? If you were the person in that movie, you would not enjoy this. The reason is that it's a transcendental experience. You have transcended the ego of the person who is being blown to bits. You are watching from a detached perspective. You have transcended the action in that movie. Therefore, it's transcendental. This is how aestheticians explain this. However, the problem with material sense gratification, as Prabhupada nicely concludes his sentence, is that they are saturated with the modes of material nature. What happens when something is saturated with the modes of material nature? Well, it depends on which modes it's saturated with. If it's saturated with tamoguna, then it's miserable from the beginning to end. That's why nobody likes to eat stale food. Nobody likes to see an old movie. Especially if it doesn't run properly, because these things are tamasic, right? If it's saturated with passion, then what do we learn from Bhagavad Gita? What is the result of passion? Who's read Bhagavad Gita? Huh? Misery, suffering. So that doesn't work either. And what about sattva-guna? Then what happens? In the mode of sattva-guna, if you... then you get conditioned by it. You get complacent. You become attached to it. This is what impels us on in material existence. If there were only tamoguna or rajoguna with no degree of sattva, then nobody would have any incentive to remain here. Therefore, the sattva guna is the most insidious of all the modes. Watch out. It's one of those crocodiles. Krishna Krishna says, I don't remember the verse. Sukha sangena janaka. He said it binds one through this concept of happiness. And we also know it actually gets worse. The more advanced you become materially, the more sattvic you become. And the more sattvic you become materially, the more in knowledge you become. And the more in knowledge you are, the greater you can enjoy. And you become attached until eventually you blow it, and through some bad karma, you have to go down again. Up and down. And up and down. Kalidas, the Sanskrit poet, he writes in his Meghaduta, it's like a wheel. When the spokes of a wheel are spinning very fast, can you see them? You just see a blur. That's how significant it is. Now, just freeze frame this for 1 minute. For a split second. There's one spoke at the top, and then the next split second, that same spoke is all the way at the bottom, and then you just go ahead and, release the pause and let it, and you can see it's a blur. What is the significance of any of it? That is what our situation is like in this material world. We may have a very good situation right now, but it's like a snap, and it's over before you know it. So this is where sattva guna can really get you. So be careful of that. So this is the problem. The very, very, one simple little sentence that most of us would have driven right over. Right? But Srila Prabhupada has said something very profound here. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on is compared to a mere drop of water, because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. Therefore, neither collectively nor individually can they satisfy the vast requirements of the desert-like tongue. Despite crying in various conferences, oh, I love this. Prabhupada says, despite crying in various conferences, therefore, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. Prabhupada has a way with words. For this reason, people from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are compared to swans swimming around in the beautiful lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or bees humming around his lotus feet in transcendental pleasure, bhakti bees. It's called bhakti saranga. We mentioned sara before. Anybody who's attentive knows what does sara mean? Essence. So saranga, ga, means to go. They go for the essence. Therefore, the bees are called sarangas. They go for the essence. The essence of a flower is the nectar. And similarly, the essence of life is the nectar that you can derive from it in Krishna consciousness. So bhakti sarangas, they're bhakti bees. They're buzzing. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman, liberation, and similar dry speculative objects. The urge of the soul proper is different. The soul can be solaced only by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his many bona fide devotees, who never leave the lotus feet of the Lord to become imitation Mahaprabhus, but all cling to his lotus feet like bees that never leave a honey-soaked lotus flower. Srila Prabhupada ki!
Jai!
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki!
Jai!
This is just so wonderful. I had to say that. Now the next paragraph. Lord Chaitanya's movement of Krishna consciousness is full of dancing and singing about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. How often do we dance and sing about Krishna's pastimes? Every day. Jashomati Nandana Brajavara Nagara, etc. It is compared herein to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotus flowers. The enjoyers of these lotus flowers are the pure devotees, who are like bees and swans. They chant in the flowing of the Ganges, the river of the celestial kingdom. The author desires such sweetly flowing waves to cover his tongue. He humbly compares himself to materialistic persons who always engage in dry talk from which they derive no satisfaction. Interesting distinction here. Prabhupada was talking about transcendental pleasure in these things before. So there is some pleasure, but there's no satisfaction. If they were to use their dry tongues to chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as exemplified by Lord Chaitanya, they would taste sweet nectar and enjoy life. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Sri Nityananda. All glories to Advaita Chandra and all glories to the devotees of Lord Gauranga. Giriraj Swami and I were speaking. That's mentioning Giriraj Swami. I should apologize for being here instead of him. But one has to do one as one is told. There is a verse by the poet Bilvamangala Thakur, and he says, Abhyarshya geham yuvati pravidha prema pravaha dadhinirma mantha udgayate gopasiti samasta govinda damodara madhaveti. This verse describes a gopi in the spiritual world. She has risen early in the morning, or maybe it's in this Gokula Vrindavan, because the spiritual world is in both places. Yeah, there's Goloka Vrindavan, that's the spiritual realm, the highest level of Vaikuntha planets. And then even in this Bhoma Vrindavan, we call it, even in this worldly sphere, as Krishna incarnates, for example, in Shweta Dvipa, sometimes he brings his whole dham with him as well, and that's manifested in Gokula Vrindavan, in this material world. So the pastimes are eternally going on in both places, because both places are absolute, non-dual. So a young girl wakes up early in the morning, and she takes her bath, and she worships the household deities, and she cleans the house and goes about her duties. One of those duties include joining with the older cowherd women and churning butter. Why do they churn butter in the spiritual world? Why? Why butter? Krishna likes butter. That's reason enough for them, at least. Krishna likes it. So they're making a lot of butter for Krishna. Udgayate gopa siti samasta, and all of them are chanting while they're churning, because it's described in the 10th canto as the gopis are churning butter. They're wearing these jangly, you know, like they still have. It's interesting. When I was in college, I read a history book, Indian history. And he was describing that they have found shards of these, what do you call these glass ones, the colored ones? Bangles. In Hindi, kya usko bolte hain? Who knows? Huh? Yeah, churia, that's right. So they have found shards of these things from, in the Punjab Valley, from like 2,500 years ago. I mean, that is cultural continuity, isn't it? You know, and Prabhupada said on the other hand, the American disease is, if you can stand on your head and walk backward, do it, but somehow or other change. Like here in America, everybody has a different phone number every 6 months. Different address every 6 months, different spouse every 6 months, different guru every, you know. This is the American disease. But this is the eternal existence. Things don't change. Once you come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, there's no more change. And therefore there's no more shochati, there's no more kangshati either. No more lamenting, no more hankering. You're satisfied. As Prabhupada wrote, here, devotees are they enjoy nectar at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they are satisfied. So this girl wakes up and she's churning, and there's a jangly rhythmic noise being made. That rhythm is in effect the kartals. And then all the gopis sing together. And what do they sing? Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. They sing the names of Krishna. So I was thinking about this, and because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has mentioned desert-like tongues, we have desert-like tongues. Our tongues are parched because they don't have this nectar of the names of Krishna. But the devotees who are singing, these gopis who are singing in the spiritual world, what does that 10th canto verse describe? Their singing dissipates inauspiciousness in all directions. How does that dissipate inauspiciousness in all directions? How does the gopis singing in Golok Vrindavan, or in Gokula Vrindavan for that matter, how does it dissipate inauspiciousness in all directions? Who can tell me this? What's your realization? Yes, Prabhu. In all directions? Okay, let's proceed. Please, Agi Bolo.
A little bit further.
Okay, there's a missing link here. This is the right answer, actually. Anybody else, Sukumar? Okay, that's a good realization. That's one answer. Krishna and his name are not different. The separation is dispelled when they sing Krishna's name. And the inauspiciousness of separation is removed, but it's not in all directions. How does the gopi singing and glorifying Krishna while they're churning butter, how does it dissipate inauspiciousness in all directions? I can't give a definitive answer, but what I was thinking about this and discussing it with Giriraj Swami, we decided that this Govinda Damodar Stotra, that from which this verse is taken, it's an example of, well, Krishna Karnamritam is Bilvamangala Thakur's main book, and our Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas have commented on that book, that these are, most of those verses are expressions of the ecstasy that Srimati Radharani feels in separation of Krishna. And in the Govinda Damodar Stotra, we have so many beautiful verses like this one that we can hear and we can chant. But somebody has to give these verses to us, because we're in, like in the desert. And in California especially, we'll think like this because it gets very dry. And every summer they have these wildfires. I was telling Sri Rupa yesterday, Californians, they get their karma, you know, one way or other, they get it. If it's dry, then they have these wildfires, and they burn up all whatever grass, whatever vegetation is there. And then once everything is burnt down to the ground level, then it rains, and then they get these mudslides, and everybody's, you know, their houses fall into the ocean, and it's just a real mess. And if nothing else, they get earthquakes or carjacking. Something. Anyway, so California burns at least every year, every summer. They, you know, a good part of the state will be, it seems to be getting worse also. So it's the blazing fire of material existence. And our acharyas have said that saṃsāra dāvāna lalīha loka tranāya kāruṇya ghanā ghanātvam prāptasya kalyāna gunārna vasya vande guru śrī caraṇārvindam. These spiritual masters, they are taking rain. Where does rain come from? It comes from the ocean. Who is the ocean? Krishna. Krishna is the ocean of auspiciousness. Kalyana Gunarnava. It doesn't start there, though. Where does the ocean? What? There's something entering the ocean. Prema pravaha pravidha is the word that Bilvamangala uses in this verse. A gopi is like a strong current of love, and she joins with the other gopis. After finishing her household duties, this strong current impels her to go and join the rest of the gopis and to sing in Sankirtana together about Krishna. They have such ecstatic Sankirtana that the little rivulets, the little tributaries of every individual gopi sentiments, they join together into one massive current, which flows like the Ganga into the ocean. Krishna is the ocean. They join with Krishna in that way. As Kapiladev says, when we engage in devotional service, devotees who have a taste, they cannot be stopped. And in particular, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Srimati Radharani cannot be stopped. There were some gopis, they couldn't get out of their houses, and they went either by meditation or they gave up their bodies because they just were determined. But Srimati Radharani, she cannot be stopped. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, she's like this unstoppable current. It knocks over the bridges, it pushes through anything. Unstoppable floodwaters of divine love. So the gopi sentiments are flowing towards Krishna like that. Once they join together with Krishna and they mix with Krishna, then that water is absorbed into a rain cloud. And then the rain cloud, these are the devotees. These are our acharyas. They're coming to this parched material world, like desert, he said here, and they're disseminating these same songs that the gopis are singing in the spiritual world. Evam parampara praptam evam rajarshayo vituhu. They're giving this thing to us. Now, these devotees are not acting independently either. They're the representatives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu Lila. This Sankirtana movement is the Lila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rameshwar Das, dear devotee of Srila Prabhupada, one time he brought his realization to the attention of his divine grace. He said, I think that when we sing, Nikunja yuno rati keri siddhya ya yali bhir yukti rapekshaniya tatrati dakshyadati vallabhasya vande guru shri charanaravindam. What is the translation of this verse? Anybody know? Yeah, the spiritual master is very expert in assisting the gopis who affect the pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and in particular, they're bringing other gopis to join. And Rameshwar told Srila Prabhupada that I think that when we go on Sankirtana, this is what we're doing, is it not? These people are potentially gopis. They may have forgotten their identity, but they are gopis in essence, we hope. At least it would seem that... Otherwise, how has Krishna arranged for them to get their book? So, and Srila Prabhupada said, yes, your realization is correct. So the spiritual master is doing this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing this. So today is the anniversary appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is expanding his own ecstasy. We haven't read these verses yet. They're still coming, and we should read them. If not together, then at least individually. There is deep, deep significance to the purpose for which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended. It's not just to propagate the Yuga Dharma of Nam Sankirtana that Lord Chaitanya came. That, if we've read the third chapter, we know of the Adi Lila. We know that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his own purpose to come here as well, his own confidential interests. We know that only Krishna can award love of Godhead. And that is the special thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is offering. He's offering divine love of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Anarpitacharim chidat kunanayava tirna kalau. It was not given for a long, long time. Means, practically speaking, no one ever before gave this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of Mahavadanya. He wants to disseminate his mercy far and wide, and therefore these devotees who are raining mercy upon us. Prabhupada said the quality of mercy is not strained, it droppeth from heaven as if a gentle rain. He quoting from Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice. So the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is being sprinkled upon everyone through his agents, such as his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. So today is the appearance day of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so we can enter a little deeply into his mood, his desire. This is what Rupa Goswami did, and for which we glorify him. We should also try to do the same thing. We should deepen our Krishna consciousness by this process. Prabhupada said, devotees should be like deep water fish. We mentioned already this ocean of bhakti rasa, nectar ocean of bhakti rasa. We should be like fish swimming very, very deep in that ocean. Because I know in California, if you see on the surface the little fishies that come up, what's up here? Then there's pelicans patrolling just over the water, and they come down and finished. So in the same way, Jagadananda Pandit says, what is that verse? Krishna bahir mukha jiva bhogavan chikare nikatastha maya tare japati adhare. When a living entity decides to turn away from Krishna and check out maya, go and see avatar instead of Kali Yuga avatar, then maya's waiting just nearby, and just like that, you end up as a flopping fish in the mouth of a pelican, and within a few seconds, you are history. So devotees instead are like deep water fish. Rupa Goswami says, they're like the fish that go very, very deep into the ocean. And they're drinking that water to their full satisfaction. Or here is in this verse, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is describing it to a lake, and the lotus flowers are there. So same idea. Lotus flowers are providing nectar for the bhakti bees and for the swans. This is the real purpose of human form of life. But it's short. Use it or lose it. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments on this?
The realization that I've gotten was that the instruction we get from that is to hear from a bona fide source. Because the gopis, when they actually are singing, they are actually creating remembrance of Krishna. The greatest inauspiciousness for us is forgetfulness of Krishna. And as a result of which, ignorance is imposed on us. And in all directions, this is happening. So the darkness that I saw was the darkness of ignorance that actually has covered all directions in the material world. And by hearing the singing of the gopis, that actually allows us to once again remember Krishna. And then the darkness is dissipated. And because the devotees of Krishna are in all directions, Prabhupada said, the devotees of Krishna, every street corner, he said, there are devotees of Krishna. Our business is to go and touch them so that they will again resume their devotional service, their love for Krishna. So because the devotees are everywhere, these devotees who are honest in their heart, when they hear these songs, they actually are reminded of Krishna. And once again, they resume their service. And as a result, their resumption of their service, the darkness in that area will be dissipated because now there'll be true knowledge, which is actually gotten rid of the ignorance. So it was like the realization I got. The other one was the qualitative feature. I heard it a little differently. What I heard was this, that when you have a transcendental drop, the qualitative feature of a transcendental drop, then it's actually a feature. Just like, say, we say that, okay, what is the difference between the living entity and God? Qualitatively, we are the same. But we're actually not the same. Jai Shri Radha Kalachanji Ki Jai. We're actually not the same as God, even though qualitatively we are said to be the same. There is a qualitative similarity between the living entity and God, but actually the living entity is not God. So in the same way, to look at a transcendental feature, a feature of this transcendental drop of happiness, is actually that it seems like it is the real thing, but it's actually not the real thing. And so what happens is a little like cubic zirconia, When a person doesn't know what a diamond really is, then if someone presents cubic zirconia to them, they'll think, yes, this is diamond. So in a sense, they will enjoy the pleasure of that diamond. They will feel the pleasure of that diamond in their heart. But that's only an illusory feeling. It's not the real feeling because they didn't get to see the real diamond. They didn't get to feel the real diamond. They didn't get to feel the real thing. So in that sense, I saw that the feature part was, in a sense, Krishna's mystic potency that he has of how he can cheat the living entity into thinking that the living entity is actually enjoying these pastimes of arts and culture and all these things. They actually think they're enjoying it.
Yeah,
they're totally in that mood, that they're enjoying it. And if you go and tell them, oh, this is not real enjoyment, they'll laugh at you.
Yeah.
They'll say, it is real enjoyment. What are you talking about? But so why it is like that is because of this qualitative feature. There is a qualitative feature. The qualitative feature is it looks the same, but it's actually not the same.
Yeah, Prabhupada said a snake is real and a rope is real, but
yeah.
When you think a rope is a snake, that's not real.
That's not real. So I saw it like that, that was the transcendental part of it, you know, that how it was still transcendental. It was transcendental in the sense that the real thing would be transcendental. It's just our conception that is actually wrong.
Yeah, we're wrong.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a few answers to that. Another way to look at it is what Krishna says in chapter 10. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam, srimat urjda mevava, tatadevava gacchattvam, mama tejom shasambhavam. Know whatever you see, anything beautiful, glorious, mighty, etc., it springs from but a spark of my splendor. So Krishna has manifested some degree of his own opulence. I mean, Krishna is the only one who really has these opulences to manifest. So he's done that, even in this material world, and that's what draws us. We're attracted.
The singing of the gopis when they're churning the butter is really beautiful. It's a very beautiful description
in the Bhagavatam
of what reality is.
Yeah.
That it is only because of the singing of the gopis that we actually know anything.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like you said, we actually know nothing.
We can take it down the chain. I mean, it's really only because of the singing of our predecessor acharyas that we know anything. Somebody decided to leave Vrindavan and go and give Krishna consciousness to the most unqualified people in the world. And we're totally indebted to that. Without Srila, can you imagine Krishna consciousness without Srila Prabhupada's books? I can't.
And so, you know, I was thinking that, you know, how we have these 108 beads in our mala, in our japa mala, and they represent each of these gopis, these 108 principal gopis. So actually, when we are chanting Hare Krishna, when we are chanting the Maha Mantra, we can actually, by being sincere in our chanting, by chanting purely, we actually will have access to hearing properly now. So our ears will open up in the sense that they'll be able to actually hear, our senses will be able to actually feel the prayers or the songs of the gopis and, of course, all the acharyas who come after them. Mm. Otherwise, here is this opportunity that Prabhupada was so kind to us, that he gave us these beads and said, okay, chant on these beads and you will become fully successful in your life, fully happy. It's amazing that all of them stem from the same story. It goes back, you see them, they all sort of link back. And finally, like we say, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's greatest contribution, one of his greatest contributions was, whatever you do, ultimately it links back to Krishna. It can be proven to be actually like every word from the dictionary can be proven to mean Krishna. Every alphabet can be proven to mean Krishna. Every sound can be proven to mean Krishna. Everything can be proven to mean Krishna.
Janmadyasya yataha.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, there's more. Every single one of these verses, you can expand it like this. Everything, it's just so deep. It's incomprehensibly deep. We haven't even got to the real verse that I was thinking to speak on this morning was Yaradvaito Brahma, that one. We didn't even make it that far. Maybe later, I don't know. But anyway, this is the wonder of Krishna consciousness, and this is the divine grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the form of Srila Prabhupada, that we have such wonderful books. We should cherish them. Because when the eyes no longer work, when the brain no longer works, when your memory no longer works, you've lost your access. In effect, for all practical intents and purposes, you've lost your human form of life. I know, because I've seen my mother is in that position. She can't remember anything that she heard yesterday. She can't read because her eyes are decayed to that degree. And all of us are in rotting bodies, and we're all getting older. and eventually they'll stop working. We have to use it now while we can. In Seattle, they made these nice Maha Mantra cards. They distributed on Harinam. It said, please chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, while you can. Anything else? Yes?
In the beginning of Mangalacharanam that you read today, there's a mention of six categories mm-hmm. of Mahaprabhu. We usually hear about five. What is the sixth one?
Spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord himself, the incarnations of the Lord, the manifestations of the Lord, and the energies of the Lord. Actually, the seven, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Vande Gurun, Isha Bhaktan, Isham, Isha Avatarakan, Taprakashan, Chakti, Krishna Chaitanya Sanyakam. So seven. And that means the spiritual masters, the devotees, the Supreme Lord, the incarnations, the manifestations, and the potencies, as well as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. This verse will be explained in chapter 1. So if you want further details, the entire first chapter is devoted to explaining each of the each of those categories in that verse. And
I was just trying to correlate that with the Panchatattva.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that this directly correlates to Panchatattva.
Okay.
There's another verse. That other verse we said was Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam. That verse. That's dealing with Panchatattva. This is dealing with Panchatattva plus more. So this is Panchatattva plus. God.
So these two the extra is will be the guru.
No.
And I'm just trying to understand if we do correlate, what will be the two extra Panchatattva plus?
Well, I would say it's not Panchatattva plus anything. It's six categories plus Panchatattva. You have to see it differently. These verses, they don't correlate, I think, directly. That's my point. They're not connected. I mean, Isham, you can say, you know, maybe Ishavatarakan, you can possibly, it depends on how you interpret it. You would have to go through the purports and scrutinize the commentaries and then come up with your own sub-commentary. Is that okay? But you can read the rest of chapter 1 deals with this verse, and then with the Panchatattva verse, I think would be in chapter 4. So each of these verses of the Mangalacharan, it's explained in sequence. Most of them, at least. Not all of them, but most of them. Anything else? All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.